NASA 557, contact tower 128.15.
Caution, caution. Manual, fuel, manual, fuel.
I'm John Golia.
I'm Greg Fife.
And I'm Todd Curtis.
And we are the Flight Safety Detectives.
Between us, we have over a century of aviation accident investigation and safety experience to draw on as we discuss issues that affect all of us.
So we are qualified to share our perspectives on accidents and incidents and what can be learned from them for the future.
We're proud to say we've got three sponsors that really relate to the topic of aviation safety: the Professional Aviation Maintenance Association, or PAMA, Piston Power, and Avemco Insurance, a world-class provider of aviation insurance.
Later on in the show, we'll tell you how you can get a 5% discount on your insurance just for listening to the show.
We don't just dissect the official reports. In every episode, we identify safety issues and take the mystery out of accident investigations.
So maybe pilots and their planes can have safer flights ahead.
Well, hello, gentlemen. It is another episode of Flight Safety Detectives. Always good to see you. And, of course, we are scattered around the countryside. We're going to be talking about an engine program and an engine problem on an airplane that I think you'll all find very interesting because it really segues into the need for a maintenance program on your aircraft, especially with the engines.
We have an event from our friends at SINIPA, the organization down in Brazil that does investigation of accidents. And this was a single-engine aircraft that had engine problems and landed short of the intended airport. This is in June 2023, taking off from one city in Brazil to another, and I'm not going to embarrass myself by trying to pronounce the cities, but this was a 470 nautical mile flight over, let's just say, relatively sparse population areas. And somewhere en route, there was an engine problem, and they diverted to an airport that was about 7 nautical miles short of their intended airport. The engine quit on them, and they were able to land this. Fortunately, both people on board, the pilot and the passenger, were uninjured. The aircraft was destroyed, of course. But the thing that stood out about this was, at the end, the recommendation. There was a recommendation here that I frankly had never seen before. They have this is done a little bit differently from the NTSB. They have conclusions and contributing factors. And the contributing factor, which is the strange thing, the absence of a trend monitoring program impaired that adequate assessment of the general conditions of the engines and its accessories could have prevented the occurrence of a failure that affected the fuel system components in flight. Bottom line, there were engine accessories that had issues, and those engine accessories caused the failure of the engine. But they're saying a trend monitoring system, program of some sort, might have helped them. And this was an aircraft that had had an overhaul of the engine. They had an exact number of months here, 184 months and 2 days, I think it was. We're talking, 15 years? And the recommended time to do an overhaul, according to the manufacturer, was either 12 years or 1,700 hours. Whichever occurred first. The 12 years had occurred, but there was only 1,400 hours that had accrued on this aircraft.
Can you tell whether or not they're alluding to the fact that maybe they lost an engine-driven fuel pump or whatever and it failed, and they're thinking
There was a problem with an O-ring that looked like it was age-related from the pictures, and it was leaking. So I think what they meant when they said about the trend monitoring, this thing had to be dumping fuel for a while.
Yeah.
And if you were monitoring your fuel burn, you would have picked up the fact that you were putting more fuel on the airplane than you were burning. You know, it would have identified itself earlier. It was obvious from the report that the Brazilian rules were not clear for the operator, whether he had to do this overhaul at that time or the 1700. In his mind, was it either or the way we read the regulation is when you hit either one of those, you have to do it.
Well, so, then that brings up a good point then for one of our sponsors, Piston Power, because you get on one of their programs, they do your trend monitoring for you.
And when you hit that 14 years or 12 years, 144 months, you can take the engine in for an overhaul, because they're going to, in their program, they're going to help you with the overhaul. And it's a worldwide program, so they could definitely have had that Piston Power type of program in Brazil. But that's neither here nor there. The fact is that the regulations were ambiguous enough that the operator could say, well, I don't want to do it in 144 months. I want to do it at 1,700 hours. And there's nothing that says that you should be looking at certain things if you're going to extend the time. So it was interesting little deficiency in the Brazilian rules. Yeah. Now, I'm sure that we had those same kind of inconsistencies here in the States years ago. You know, here we go again when we start comparing what we do here with a fully matured operation, you know, with our general aviation community being robust all the way back before the Second World War. And now you have a developing country that's just coming into it 50 or 60 years later, and they're doing growing pains that we've already experienced and passed by.
Yeah.
So it's hard to throw stones in their direction because they're still building their aviation system.
We're going to take a short break now to meet one of Avemco's employees from their Frederick, Maryland office.
Well, JT, I understand that you have years and years of experience in insurance business, but you're here for 2 years, is that correct?
A little over 2 years, yes.
Why did you come here?
For a change of scenery, let's say. Been in the business and industry for a long time, P&C side, underwriting claims, everything, marketing. I've worked with some of these people in the past, prior carrier, and thought it would be interesting, educational, something new I wanted to try and learn about. So I took the leap, and I love it. Absolutely love it.
So what makes you an expert in aviation, since you're talking with pilots and trying to determine whether or not Avemco is going to insure them?
Right. The pilots themselves have been my best teachers. Speaking with the pilots over the last 2+ years has been fantastic. It's been such a great learning experience, learning curve for me. I've learned so much. We've done ground school. We've had CFI come in, give us hours of ground school, worked in the simulator, going to the flight shows, different things, Sunathon, Oshkosh, do the NAFI summit, things like that, talking to the folks down there. It's been an absolutely great learning experience and a pleasure for me. I enjoyed it immensely.
So what's been really the most challenging element of this business now that you're on the aviation side?
Learning the ins and outs of the planes. The underwriting side, I know how to underwrite. I get the information I need from people, but learning about the types of planes that we're insuring, that was the biggest learning curve. And I think I've got a pretty good grasp on that now from talking to the pilots and in-house education. So that was the biggest challenge, going from, say, commercial buildings to Cessnas or Pipers or
And now, back to the flight safety detectives.
Let's talk about some aspects of this which are less questionable. The pilot. Pilot was had a commercial and instrument rating at about 4,200 hours. The report was not clear as to whether or not this was an owner-operator who was intimately familiar with the aircraft or whether this pilot was just ferrying it from one point to another. But the pilot was in a rather challenging situation. Again, we're talking about straight line distance, about 450 or so nautical miles, which even under the best of circumstances might be a bit fatigue generating for a small single engine aircraft like this. And also there are very few alternate airfields in this part of Brazil. And when this person did go to an alternate airfield, it was in a fairly a built-up area, and I'm going to flash a picture on the video version of this that shows the flight path of the aircraft. It was coming in for landing to a runway that was surrounded by residential areas. And my eyeball looking at the graphic here, I think the airplane could have made it all the way to the field, but it would have had to have flown over a residential area very close to the airport. I think the pilot wisely made a decision to make a sweeping right turn, landed in a park, hit a bunch of what they call bushes that were like 18 feet tall. I guess they grow them taller in Brazil. And had very little forward velocity when it went pancaked in, broke off the wing, wrecked the empennage, but the fuselage was relatively undamaged and both people survived. So, you know, tip of the hat to the skill of this pilot. But again, getting back to the question of, here is a 53-year-old airplane flying in a part of Brazil, like many parts of Brazil, where you have long distances and few alternatives when you're flying. And I don't know the reason this person was flying or the amount of work that this person took to look at the airplane, but it begs the question, as a pilot, what's your responsibility when you're going to take an aircraft into a rather challenging situation like this, either over water or over wide tracts of desolate land?
Well, I think from a pre-flight standpoint in your planning, you know, yeah, there are going to be those long stretches, but, you know, just like flying locally, you want to know that if you have a problem, where's the best place to put it down? Whether that may be an airfield or an airport along your route that you know you can glide to based on, you know, your altitude, but over a desolate area, okay, look at a map and especially, and look at Google Earth. This is what I keep preaching all the time now, because again, you got, if you carry a phone, you carry an iPad with you, you can pull up Google Earth. Look along your route of flight. You may find that, yeah, you got 300 miles of frickin' forest land or whatever, but there may be gaps in that forest, holes in the forest, if you will, that could be used as an alternative landing site. So it's all about the pre-flight and being prepared. And that's why I'm curious, you know, when you think 470 miles, you got two people on board. If they started with full fuel, of course, they should have had technically a sufficient amount of fuel. So did they run out? Well, John explained that, you know, if they have a gasket or an O-ring that's failed in some sort and they're pumping fuel overboard, then yeah, I mean, who was monitoring fuel flow? And who was monitoring, you know, time? Because, you know, we're switching all the time. I mean, you're doing fuel performance, if you will. You should be doing fuel performance. And no, something's not right here. And like John said, you know, do you have a high fuel flow? Is that why you're running through this gas? If you have your normal fuel flow, yet you're pumping a bunch overboard, and you're going through fuel, and it's like, well, I'm burning 15 gallons an hour. Why am I not, you know, getting the endurance out of it? I mean, these are the things that you can't just, you know, pass off, write off, ignore. You should be asking questions.
It's complacency slipping in. The engine seems to be running good, and we just truck along. I'll tell you what, it is a boring flight. I actually flew for a couple of hours over that jungle, and it, man, it's just green. It's an ocean of green trees. There is virtually no breaks in it anywhere. It's amazing. I was in awe of all of it, flying over it. But I had two engines, too.
Yeah, and you were going between two major cities, too. You were going, like, between what, Sao Paulo and Brasilia?
Yeah, it's a long flight, and it's over nothing. You know, I can't remember seeing any open ground, any clearances. It probably was. I just don't remember seeing it. It was 20 years ago when I did that.
Yeah. Well, I think it's a good accident to, you know, to bring up for the very reason that, you know, John's always preaching it at the end of the show about pre-flight planning. It's one thing to do a pre-flight on your aircraft, but you also have to give the same amount of attention to your planning, especially on these long cross-country flights. It's kind of like taking off out of Utah and heading to Las Vegas or, you know, down in New Mexico where you're going to drive for 200 miles and there ain't a gas station. So you better fill up. And if your fuel performance, you know, isn't what you think it is, it's like, something's going on here. So, you know, it's all about, again, thinking ahead, being prepared, and what's plan B? if you have to exercise Plan B, what is Plan B? You know, it's real easy to just assume that, hey, I haven't had a problem in the past. Things are okay. You know, I'm ready to go. The airplane's good to go. Let's go.
Now, there's some we talked about pre-flight planning, but before we did the show, Greg, you were talking to us about pre-purchase planning. That is, you're thinking of buying an airplane and buying into a program like Piston Power up front. It means that if you, in the first 10 hours of flying your brand new, newly owned airplane, you find all sorts of issues, those issues might come into the contract and you won't have those surprises.
And that's a good point. I'm finally, and I talked about this on previous shows, that I'm buying a Turbo Aero and it needs some work now. I'm finally going to be able to get the work done. But, you know, and it's a great airplane. It's in great shape, low time. The engine's only got 200 hours since overhaul. But the problem is the airplane's been sitting for quite a long time. And while the airframe will definitely be airworthy, my big concern, of course, is the engine, because it's been sitting so long and hasn't run. And so, putting the airplane under a program that Piston Power offers is going to be, you know, first order of business. I've already talked to Avemco. They're going to be insuring me and the airplane. So, they insured all of my other airplanes in the past. They've been a great partner to work with from that standpoint. So I'm looking forward now to working with Piston Power to come up with a program for this particular airplane as well.
Okay, so we hit a lot of good issues for pilots to think about, including the ones that we're always preaching. Me especially, I feel like I'm going to open up a church.
John, is that going to have a confessional in it?
God, no. I never admit what stays in the past stays in the past.
Well, this indirectly brings up my second to last word. Why indirectly? Because how can I go from a confessional where everything stays in the past to this subject? I was actually looking for a completely different accident, or kind of accident, in the Brazilian version of the NTSB. And I clicked on the first one that had an English translation of their accident report. And when I read through it, I thought, wow, I've never seen this combination of things in an accident report before. We should do a show about this. By the way, we'll have the Portuguese and the English version of this report. So our friends in Brazil and Portugal, or who are native Portuguese speakers, feel free to download that and learn from it.
Right.
So my advice to you, hey, go out there and look for some accidents and incidents that are relevant to what you're doing as a pilot or as a mechanic, so you might be able to learn a thing or two.
And with if that, you find, John, a good one, send it to us.
Yeah, we'll talk about it for sure. Yeah. So that that leads us to the last word, and John, it's all yours.
Yeah, and as usual, I got to do my preaching. You know, if you're going to go flying, need to plan. We've given a couple examples in this, both of these accidents, where pre-planning could have made a difference. So you need to do a plan before you leave for the airport. Do it again at the airport. Make sure they agree. Take into all the different considerations, not just, you know, the generic ones that you find in some of the manuals that deal with only the aviation piece of flying. You got to deal with, like Greg is just mentioning, the terrain between here and there, not just the weather between here and there. Do you want to have a little extra fuel because you're going a long way? Can you take a little extra fuel if, you know, and the airplane takes the weight? If not, maybe you want to make a stop along the way. God forbid we're going to make a stop, but maybe a prudent thing would be to make a stop and going over areas where there's just no place to land. Find the highway, and maybe you get lucky. But, you know, make your own luck. Do pre-planning. And Greg and I talk about a number of the accidents that we've done where flight controls were disconnected. He talked about the wing that was loose because of wear in the attach points. I mean, those are all detectable on the ground. You know, I tell people all the time, touch your airplane, move your flight controls. If you got a low wing or even a high wing airplane, if you're tall enough, shake the hell out of it. See what it hear. All of a sudden you start hearing clunking. You got to say, oh, what's that? you know. So there's all kinds of things that you can do to protect yourself from this, these admittedly rare events, but they don't happen rarely. We've seen them over and over and over again every year. You know, I haven't looked at the last couple of years, but I think we're still up around 1,000 or 1,200 general aviation accidents a year. And that's a lot of airplanes. Yeah. It's a lot of opportunity for missed opportunities for preventing them. So pay attention. Pay attention. And especially when you get in the air, there is just so damn many new pilots out there. And as new pilots, we're going to make mistakes. I made them when I started. Right? And you don't want to be part of it. And we just had that collision with two airplanes in Arizona, an uncontrolled airport. Where were their heads? It was one airplane that had the problem because he overtook the other one, came up from the back. But where were they? What were they looking at? So just please, please pay attention. Right? As Greg says, it's the little things. Pay attention and please, please fly safely.
Thank you so much for listening to the show. We really value all of our listeners and subscribers. Our podcast gets ranked by you. So if you like this, give us 5 stars inside your podcast platform.
We want to keep the conversation going with you. So we'd love for you to engage with us on our social media channels. We're on Instagram, X, Facebook, LinkedIn, and of course, YouTube.
You can email the show at flightsafetytotexas@gmail.com. By the way, if you're watching this on YouTube, we're working on growing this channel, and it really helps if you all comment. So please do that. We read them all.
And be sure to subscribe.
Not all aircraft insurance policies and premiums are the same. As the only direct writer in the market, Avemco never uses third-party insurance agents and instead connects you directly with an aviation underwriter in their Frederick, Maryland office, ready to solve problems and to approve coverage based on what you fly and how you fly it. Avemco provides lightning-fast quotes, competitive rates, and personalized policies that are easy to read and tailored to you. Call 888-879-0389 for your free quote or visit avemco.com/flightsafety. Don't forget to tell them you're a listener of our podcast and save 5%.
Premium credits are subject to underwriting guidelines, including Avemco-recognized training and memberships.